Our creative potential is infinite, stitchless, without bounds. Creativity manifests itself in a million ways, and we can be inspired by all of them. I'm your host, Anushka, and this is Stitchless. In this show, I will chat with a diverse range of creatives about their art and streams of thinking. I want these conversations to inspire new creative exploration, regardless of medium. Whether you're a painter inspired by a poet's method of capturing the scene, or a designer inspired by a photographer's brainstorming process. In this episode, I chat with writer, podcaster, and conversationalist Vaibhavi Hemasundar. I hope you get something from this conversation, because as a creative myself, I sure as hell did. Stick around until the end of the episode for a reading of one of her favorite book passages. So, welcome to the show.
I'm so happy to be here.
I'm so honored that you're here. Like, for background for the listeners, me and Vaibhavi have, like, gotten coffee and stuff before, and I'm just so happy to have you, like, actually as the guest.
It feels so cool to be a guest on a podcast.
True! That must be cool.
All right, to start off, introduce yourself. In your own words, how would you define yourself as a creative?
I'm Vaibhavi. I use she, her pronouns. I am print managing editor at Stitch. How would I describe myself as a creative? It's difficult because, I mean, and we've had conversations about this before. I have always, like, my whole life felt like a jack of all trades, master of none of writing. I have my own podcast with one of my friends who's also on Stitch. I used to sing growing up. I used to act growing up. Oh yeah, also I danced. So, like, I've had a bunch of creative outlets throughout my life. So I've always, like, found it difficult to define myself as a creative, and, like, mad respect to, like, I don't know, like, being in people who pour their time and their skill set, all of their time and energy into honing this one skill set. But I've never been able to do that, and that has never felt true to who I am as a creative. And I feel like my strength as a creative, or, like, what's at the core of my creative self, is an appreciation for, like, art in conversation with each other.
Dude! Oh my god, this is literally why I made this show, man.
So, like, the way that different pieces of art, like, communicate with each other, and, like, the intertextuality of art itself, but then also conversation as art. And again, like, being a jack of all trades, master of none, I have come to realize that my biggest strength is actually conversation. And I have a really a unique talent for, like, bringing people together and just having genuine conversations with people, which I think, like, is a really rare art form.
Honestly,
to come across
is.
Nowadays.
Yeah. Just stellar. I think if I needed, like, one clip to be, like, the introduction for this entire show, it would have been that description, because
so glad.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally why I made this podcast. Yeah. I relate to that so much, the idea of, like, the jack of all trades and master of none, and I feel like it's hard to accept and appreciate that as its own skill.
Totally.
Because you're watching, like, I actually was listening to one of your episodes today from CNV. I think it was the rest is as a radical form of, like, rest being radical, right?
Yeah.
And you were talking about this idea when you were younger, you would get really upset at thinking of, like, lost potential.
Yes.
And, like, I could not relate to that more in terms of, like, art. I'm like, oh my god, if I dedicated, like, all my time into this one thing, I would be amazing. But instead, like, I've, like, lost that potential because I was too busy doing something else.
I mean, it doesn't, like, I really wish that I could be a master at writing and singing and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, like, I can't. Like, and, I wish often that I could pause time or something just for the sake of being able to hone all the skills I want. Not even for any end goal of, like, being able to produce something in order to, like, show it to someone else, you know? But just so I could have that satisfaction of creating in every way that I want to create. Instead, I'm settling for being average at everything and, or a little bit above average at everything and very above average in writing, but still not, like, a master at writing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Girl, I read your research paper.
Oh, did you really?
Oh my god, absolutely. I devoured that thing, bro. Every other line highlighted, annotated, like...
Oh my gosh, that means so much. I'm really proud of that, and I feel like it encapsulates the way that my brain works and, like, pulls together, like, a bunch of really, like, seemingly disparate ideas.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I'm so glad that you read that.
I remember at one point I saw on your Instagram story, you, like, posted a link to it, and you were like, this was really, like, a labor of love. And so, when I was looking through these links, this is the first thing I want to read from her. But, yeah, no, it was absolutely stunning.
Oh, thank you. For context, I took a research seminar last quarter. I'm an English and journalism double major. For my English major, we have to take a research seminar that culminates in like a 12 to 15 page paper. And I wrote mine about this specific sapphic middle grade novel adaptation of Romeo and Juliet. So there's a lot going on there. But in my research paper, I started off with like the cultural context of book bans because they've unfortunately been a lot more prevalent in the last few years. And most of the books that are banned, as you would probably guess, are like books with queer themes. So I started off talking about this cultural context, and then I used it to delve into this specific middle grade book and like the development of like child identity and like individual subjectivity, like a self outside of the selves that you just mirror, who are like the people around you. And so it was like part psychology, part lit review, part like just lots of different things. And I talked about TikTok at some point. And
yes.
Like, and that was like one of my favorite. I was like, yes, I get to talk about TikTok and queer self-discovery in a research paper.
It was lovely. And I have like specific questions related to that because I think that, especially since you gave your definition of yourself as a creative and you talked about your greatest strength being to be able to forge the conversation between the two mediums.
Yeah.
And then throughout all the writing I read from you, I noticed how you weave all these different themes together seamlessly.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that's a reflection of your creative strengths?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, and I can create in other ways because, like, how everything is in conversation with each other. Like, I think that's something that not a lot of people are able to do. My favorite articles to write, and this is why I like writing for Stitch, for context, but I'm sure that most of you guys probably know this if you're listening to this podcast, but like Stitch always has, we have a quarterly issue, and then that issue has like a broader theme. And then like all of our photo shoots and like all of the content within that issue like falls under that theme. So like we had like a reverie issue a couple of years ago, so like focused on like dreams, whether that's daydreams, nightmares, kind of just like the soft blurriness, memory, nostalgia. It's really like we pick these broad concepts for a reason. And I wrote a piece for that issue that was about soft clothing, and I really love taking these like really broad concepts and then finding a bunch of people who would have varying perspectives on that topic, and then I get to have really cool conversations with all of them and their topic through a bunch of like different lenses. So that's one of my favorite things to do. Like for that article, I talked to the owner of like a lingerie and sleepwear shop that's focused specifically on like comfortable lingerie and sleepwear. So I spoke with them. And I talked to a psychology professor. I spoke with a couple of students who, similarly to me, like I'm really sensitive to textures, hence why I wrote the article. But like I talked to those students and I referenced research papers, and it was just like things like that, just like really bring me a lot of joy, and like it itches my brain in like a satisfying way.
It's like a kaleidoscope of all the things that that is like just tickling your fancy at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so cool. I think that's what allows people to have like a unique voice in writing.
Yeah.
Or like a unique style when they're creating art is like, because everything we do, in my opinion, like you get it from somewhere. There's no such thing as like an original thought. The way you know what I mean?
Have you read Steal Like an Artist by Austin Kleon?
No.
Okay, it's essentially what we're talking about. Like, the idea that art is not created in a vacuum.
Right.
Like, all art is in conversation with each other. That was the first time that the concept had been introduced to me, that, like, I didn't have to create something new. I feel like that is just such a freeing perspective as an artist. It turns other people from a threat into like a source for inspiration, you know what I mean? Because like I think the best art is like art that like riffs off of each other. If you live in this mindset where you're like, I have to make something new, otherwise no one's gonna care about my art, etc., then you don't support other people's art, because like, why would you? But once you figure out that like nothing is actually new, then it's really cool to like interact with other creatives. And especially like in Stitch, we have writers, we have photographers, we have makeup artists, podcasters, like we have like a variety of talents, and being able to work in like a creative space like that, I think ultimately helps everyone's creativity.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's like the art is the, you, when you say like the art of conversation, the art is the curation of the different things and the piecing together.
Yeah.
So you definitely experiment and play a lot in your creative process. How would you describe like your writing process or your ideation process for your podcasts? How do you like go about mixing all those things together?
Yeah. So I'm going to start with the writing. I was just in office hours. One of my English professors, I go to her office hours every single week just to, like, talk to her.
Oh my God, I love that. Oh, she's so cool.
Yeah, I adore her. 'Cause I went in the first week. This class is called American Girlhood, and so a lot of the books that we're reading are children's books, and I personally want to write children's books at some point in time. But I was talking to her about, again, being a jack of all trades, master of none, and it feels like one of the ways in which that has, I don't want to say been an impediment, because I'm like a person who believes in like every experience kind of like getting you to where you need to go, but I can say it has been hard to narrow down like what type of writing I enjoy the most, because I enjoy all writing,
right?
And I actually just, this is funny, on our podcast Carly is always like, she always says, "Bye, Biffy, I admire your radical vulnerability, and I appreciate it, but it's also, like, I know no other way to exist."
Oh, my God, bro. God.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I literally,
speaking to me right now, dude.
Like, I literally, I don't know how to filter. Like, I'm unable to. But, like, last night, I actually canceled a prestigious journalism internship that I had lined up for spring quarter, because thinking about it, my mental health was deteriorating at like a rapid pace. I walked into my professor's office hours today, because she knows that I've been struggling for like the last couple of weeks, and I was like, you know, I'm doing so much better. I decided not to do that thing. I was like, okay, who's forcing me to do this?
Right.
No one. And I've enjoyed journalism. And I mean, I think I may potentially still enjoy journalism in the future, you know, but I think this was a really big wake-up call that, like, maybe this is not the type of writing that is for me, you know? I mean, it's the type of writing that I've focused most of my time on in the last 4 years, and I firmly believe that, like, any writing hones your craft and makes you a better writer. So I don't think that it's wasted time or anything, but now I'm like, yeah, I think I want to focus on creative writing, and like writing novels has always been the end goal. So as far as like creative process for writing, I'm like still figuring it out, because it's also, I haven't allowed myself to write creatively for the last 4 years because I've had so much to write for classes and stuff that I don't really know what my creative process is like for creative writing in particular, but for journalism, it's like I'll have conversations with people, and then it's like anything that kind of that feels like comes out of the woodworks of that conversation.
Mm.
This is gonna sound like potentially like sleazy and weird, but like I feel like I'm I feel like I'm really good at like drawing things out of people.
Oh, that's not sleazy or weird. That's the name of the game when it comes to journalism.
Yeah. No, but I feel like it can be interpreted in like a weird way. But like feel like just like in a very organic way. Like I feel like I have conversations with people and then we figure out something that is an important issue that isn't being touched on. So all of my best ideas for articles have come from talking to people or like evaluating like my own experiences, like the soft clothing article, which since then I just was like, oh, okay, I'm like neurodivergent. So fun. Yeah, back then I thought it was just tied to like my anxiety, and I was like, there's got to be some psychological basis to why soft clothing is so calming, which also it is. That's why we wear pajamas, wrap ourselves in blankets. So just like having this curiosity about something that tends to crop up and being like, okay, why exactly is this like this? Or like a lot of my article ideas come out of outrage too.
So valid. Literally so valid.
Whether that's like taking that outrage and being like, okay, these people don't have their stories told, and so I want to tell that story. So then the story itself is not a story of outrage, it's a story of joy, you know, but yes. It comes out of that like I'm frustrated that this is something that's not happening. But also I'm in an investigative journalism class this quarter, and that is a story of outrage because it's like that's in the nature of investigative journalism, to pick out an injustice and dig into what societal forces are allowing that to happen. I feel like most of my ideas come from conversation or sitting with myself and kind of like just a curiosity, extending curiosity to not just myself, but also to like my interactions with other people, you know?
Okay, so how did you get into creative avenues that you explore, whether it's your podcast, how did you start working for Stitch? How did you start writing? I mean,
I've always loved writing, like my whole life. I remember, and there's probably like a moral conundrum here, but we're not going to go into that, but in second grade, my teacher had these like two shiny notebooks. I don't know, they were like cool notebooks. And she was like, I want to give these to two students who love writing. And so she like gave me one of these notebooks, and it was like yellow and shiny. I would like write little like short stories and stuff in there like all the time. I got into writing because I've always loved reading. This is something that I always feel weird telling people because it's, I don't know, it feels like a weird whatever. I taught myself how to read when I was 3.
That's cool.
Yeah, no, I think it's such a fun fact, but also I feel like it sounds so pretentious.
I understand.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, yes, I taught myself how to read.
No, literally.
But it doesn't come across that
way. You know what I mean? I taught myself how to read from Dr. Seuss's ABCs. That was always something that, like, I have an older sister, and, like, I saw her reading, and it wasn't even necessarily out of jealousy. It was more of, like, just, like, curiosity, just being, like, what is she doing? I have loved reading ever since. I just have started inhaling books at, like, a very young age. And so stories have always been really important to me. And then I was like, oh, wait, someone had to, like, make these. They didn't, like, come out of nowhere. Like, someone made these. And then I got a journalism internship in high school. I, like, started writing for this local magazine. And that's how I got into journalism. Yeah. So I guess, like, writing has just always been a part of my life. Carly and I are both English majors, and after class we got lunch, and this is when we were still kind of just like friendly acquaintances, because we knew each other through Stitch and like a couple of classes and stuff, but we got lunch after class, and we fell down this like rabbit hole of like talking about the male gaze, and loaded that podcast. That was our first podcast episode was for the Stitch podcast, and then we figured out we have just like a bunch of common interests. So we were like, you know, we're pretty entertaining, like we can we can like make this our own thing.
Yeah,
and it'll also be nice to have a space where we're not cut off, like we're just allowed to speak, because I mean that's a big thing as a woman, especially as a woman of color, like just like people just don't think that you deserve to have the space to talk.
Yeah. My God. This is hitting a lot right now.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God.
It's just like really therapeutic for us to like have this conversational podcast where it's like the goal is not to learn anything. You know how a lot of podcasts it feels like they're like a tool of capitalism in a lot of ways, because it's like, yeah, in your 5 minutes of free time, you can learn a new thing about history.
Literally.
Like, I don't care.
Very goal-oriented.
Yeah, exactly. And there is no goal. Like, we're just chatting for, like, an hour, and we've had people come up to us and be like, I listen to your podcast while I go to sleep because I don't find it to be stressful, and sometimes I find other podcasts stressful. Yes. And it's, like, that kind of, that conversational element is really important to us. And so that's how the podcast started. And also, like, we're both, Carly and I are both really firm believers, and like, you don't have to be a genius at whatever software to be able to to produce something. And I think that's a huge barrier for like everyone except for white men and like getting into podcasting.
It's so real.
Those stupid white men who like start their own podcast and have no original ideas.
It's like
but like everyone else, like, we underestimate our abilities. Anyone with marginalized identities is like, oh yeah, I have to perfectly understand how to do everything in order to start. And that is a barrier that white men do not have.
Yes.
And if anything, like, I operate out of spite. So like I mean, and that's how I've like built up my like my self-confidence and stuff, because at the very start of like creating anything, or like being like a little baby creator, you know, I was always like, oh, I don't feel confident in my abilities to do this. And then I would be like, okay, but these people feel confident and they have no skills. So that's how the podcast started. Singing. Oh, I miss when singing was a regular part of my life. My mom got me started in like, you know, like Carnatic music, but Indian classical music. And I always joke with people, like my white friends who like are not aware of this. I'm like, yeah, like everyone is either forced to do Indian classical music or to do Bharatanatyam and dance.
That's so real.
I was forced to sing. Mm. So I started that in elementary school, and then, I hated the, practicing aspect of that, but yeah. I liked the singing aspect of that. For me, like, there was something really powerful about like singing. For me, feels like a community building.
Yes.
Like, I hadn't even considered until that point you could create art in community. My high school didn't have a choir because I went to STEM high school with really bad arts funding.
Wow. Interesting. Yeah.
So I stopped singing around then, and then I have not gotten back into it because I feel like once you stop, it's so hard to, like, pick it back up again.
I agree.
Which is, you know, I think all creatives deal with that.
Yes.
Because
yes.
It's, like, if you know that you were good at something at some point, it's hard to, like, make yourself, I don't know, produce sounds that aren't as pretty as they used to be. And, like, know that you used to, you used to have, like, a different level of skill.
Exactly.
Singing was a big part of my life for a really long time. Dance was less of a part of my life. It was for 3 years or 4 years I did hip hop with
me too.
Oh wow. When that's so wild.
Wait, crazy. What?
Mine was in like elementary to middle school. Like late elementary, early middle school. That was literally just one of my best friends was like, I want to do dance. And she was like, will you do dance with me? And I was like, okay. And she was like, I want to do hip hop. And I was like, okay. It was great. And
that
was also like my brain being introduced to the idea that like creativity works your brain. And obviously like dance is exercise as well. So the idea that like you can create art that moves your body and you will feel better physically and mentally. My brain was just like, wow, what a concept.
One of the questions I had was like how you experiment in your art. The experimentation comes naturally. It's like like you're trying to like do it. It's like you just leap for whatever looks good to you. We talk about how like for the podcast it was conversational and that in itself was really powerful because it didn't feel like it needed to have an end goal.
Yeah.
And that I think especially in our society where everything feels like it has to be so goal-oriented, to just leap for something and dedicate yourself to something because it's fun, and then like drop it off and pick up something else simply because that is now the new shiny thing.
Yeah, like you, and I think a lot of that has to do with like, not feeling the need to like capitalize off of your art or
what brings you joy. Creation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, like, I mean, like, all the respect to people who like really, really hone in on their craft. But I think like a lot of that early, like feeling that early push to like, to specify like what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Came from feeling the need to capitalize on it. Creativity is soul healing in so many ways.
So you mentioned earlier that you have this really special like connection towards children's books. You want to write children's books when you're old. Something that really strikes me from like all the different types of ways you've explored your creativity is just like the importance of play. And I was wondering, how do you think this concept of play, of imagination, and perhaps most importantly, of the inner child, how does that inform your work? Yeah. And how does that connect to your love for children's books?
I mean, like I said, I'm taking a children's lit class right now, and I just keep going in and talking to the professor because I just love talking about children's lit so much. In the sense of, like, play and, like, not taking yourself too seriously and the therapeutic nature of not taking yourself too seriously, I feel like there's so much that we can learn from children. I mean, that's something that I think about a lot because I think, like, the best children's literature is not just, like, books where there are children going on adventures, like, books with child characters. It's the books where the author remembers what it felt like to be a child and to experience things in depth. Like mindfulness, that's something that you can work on a daily basis, and that's something that kids do naturally. Kids are the ultimate creatives, you know? Right. Like, they don't have any ideas of like the ways that creativity is supposed to look. So if you ask any kid about their ideas, like, it's so inspiring. And I feel like a lot of the time it inspires you because a lot of the ways that we pigeonhole ourselves are because we have these ideas of, like, what is available to us and what's not. But, like, everything's available to us. I mean, right. like, do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah. Access to resources is another thing. Like, right. I just want to make that clear. But you can do whatever you want with your life. And kids remind us of that. As a kid, I was really observant, intelligent, curious, and also really emotional. I've always been like a really emotional person as well. So I would finish my work quickly, and then I was aware of like the undertones in like every single conversation. Like, I could tell when people were like belittling me. And I think all children are just so much smarter than we give them credit for.
Yes. Oh my God.
I hate when people undermine children. But like, there are so many, I still have a hatred of authority figures, but like, there were so many authority figures who I could tell that they didn't respect me, and because I was like 5, and I told my professor recently in office hours that like part of why I want to write children's books is because I want to write books that make children feel respected as they are.
Yes.
You know, and for like specifically for the way that they see the world and like acknowledging that that is a special thing.
I'm also an extremely emotional person, and it really flipped the switch of like, dude, you don't need a format. You can just do it and it'll resonate. I think any listener would realize very quickly that you are incredibly emotionally aware and in tune.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you could touch a little bit more on how that sensitivity to not only yourself and your emotions, but also the world around you, how that has informed your creativity and your creative expression.
I needed a lot of creative outlets, like, from a really young age, because you need somewhere to get the emotions out. In addition to curiosity and just wanting to try things out, it's also, like, a sort of necessity in order to release whatever I'm feeling. Whether it's, like, capturing that feeling or, like, recreating the experience itself into writing or pictures or whatever. Like, anything that I see that evokes an emotional reaction in me, I'm like, okay, that's something that is worth sitting with. I recently read the book How to Do Nothing by Jenny Odell, which would highly recommend. It's about resisting the attention economy and like how social media and like many, many different things are like vying for our attention.
Yes.
And she talks about art as resistance against the attention economy. And specifically, she has this quote from this painter who weirdly enough, despised photography. I don't despise photography, but he had this very interesting quote about, like, looking at a painting and, like, the painting encapsulates all of the time that went into it. Like, when you're looking at a painting, you're not just looking at the end product, you're also looking at all of the time that was spent on it. Like, and if, I don't know.
That's honestly such a radical concept.
Isn't that so cool?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like if someone was working on a painting for like a year, you know? That's why it feels like time stops when you look at art. Because you look at art and then there's just, you're sitting with the act of this piece that like hours of labor went into it. And you can't help but be lost in each brush stroke. Paying attention to that moment is spending time with it, intentionally or not intentionally, you know, like allowing yourself to experience that emotion and not shut it off in order to get to the next thing, you know?
Mm.
Paying attention to things is an art that people have lost because of the attention economy. And to be able to create art and then share that with people brings a bit of that back into the world.
Beautiful, beautiful books.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you bring The Little Prince?
So I have this specific passage in The Little Prince that I wanted to read. Our little prince.
Oh.
He is small and blonde and has a green scarf.
Uh-huh.
And he lives in just like this random planet. In outer space. He's the sole resident of this planet.
Mm.
And it's so small that you can, like, walk in a circle and then just, like, end up in the same spot.
Mm-hmm.
And he has one tree on this planet that he tends to. And he has one rose on this planet who he talks to, and the rose can talk back. And that's it. That's his whole life. And he... I don't remember why he gets on this plane, but he gets on a plane one day and then he like crashes on Earth.
Mm.
And it's just about his journey and like what he learns from all of these creatures along the way. And also him imparting his wisdom on the people on Earth. Mm. Yes. But he meets this little fox. And one thing about the little prince, he has his rose, right? And because it's the only rose on his planet, he is like, yeah, I have this rose and she's really special. And he gets to Earth and he sees there are like fields of roses that look exactly like his rose. And he's like, oh, my rose isn't special. And he's like, oh my gosh, I didn't know that all of these other roses existed. And he meets this fox and he's like talking to this fox about the rose. The fox says, taming means creating a bond. And then little prince says, creating a bond? Yes, said the fox. To me, you're still a little boy, just the same as 100,000 other boys. I don't need you and you don't need me either. For you, I'm just a fox, the same as 100,000 other foxes. If you tame me, we'll need each other. You'll be unique in the world for me and I'll be unique for you. I'm beginning to understand, said the little prince. There's a flower. I think she's tamed me. It's possible, said the fox. You see all sorts of things on Earth. Oh, it isn't on Earth, said the little prince. The fox looked intrigued. On another planet? Yes. Are there hunters on that planet? No. That's interesting. And chickens? No. Nothing's perfect, sighed the fox. The fox returned to his thought. My life is monotonous. I hunt chickens. People hunt me. All the chickens look alike, and all the people look alike, so I'm a bit bored. But if you tame me, my life will be filled with sunshine. I'd recognize the sound of a footstep that would be different from all the others. Other footsteps make me hurry back underground. Yours would draw me out of my burrow like music. And look, do you see the field of wheat over there? I don't eat bread. Wheat is useless to me. Fields of wheat bring back no memories for me. And that's sad. But you have hair the color of gold, and that would be wonderful once you've tamed me. The wheat is golden. It will remind me of you. I'd like hearing the sound of the wind through the wheat. These three pages in The Little Prince, like, I think about that all the time. This book is so special to so many people for that reason. I guess, like, if there's one person, there's nothingness. I mean, like, not really, you know? But, like, because there's so much inside each of us. But, like, if there's one person, there's nothingness. If there's two people not talking to each other, there's also nothingness.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's two people talking to each other and making a bond, then there is magic. I think that's something that children just know inherently, and I think it's something that we, like, forget over time. But, like, that specific passage is why I brought The Little Prince.
Before we wrap up this conversation, firstly, are there any projects that you're working on that you're excited about? Or, I mean, anything you're doing in the moment that you're excited about. It doesn't have to be about the future. Are you going to get a nice, I don't know, if you're going to go to Insomnia, have a nice cookie. But is there anything, any projects you're excited about in the future?
Ooh, for projects, I mean, I have a rough draft of a book that is, that is fully created and is living in my Google Docs. I wrote the first draft of this in high school. And so, like, in the 4 years since then, I don't want to, like, open it. Like, I'm so scared to open it and, like, see my old writing, you know, even though it's, like, objectively probably not that bad. Mm. In my mind, I'm like, oh, this is cringe. Mm. But right now, because I made this decision about journalism that's not, like, a cut and dry, like, final decision, I realized that I want to give more attention to creative writing, and that, like, fills me with a lot of excitement. And then I'm like, ooh, I really, now I actually feel like I want to return back to that and, like, work with that in a different way, because obviously it's, like, creating something from scratch is a very different process than reading it over again. That feels more like collaging, where it's like, what do I want to cut? What do I want to, like, do I want to rearrange things?
Oh, I'm so excited about this. Yeah. This is crazy.
And so that's, like, project-wise. Life-wise, I mean, the decision that I made yesterday to not go through with the prestigious internship that I had lined up. I was talking about this with my professor. I was like, this is the first time in my life that I have made a huge decision that is solely with myself in mind. And it goes against what most people would think is the correct decision.
Right.
You know? Like, I decided to come to Northwestern, but that's in line with, like, what most people would be like, oh, yeah, of course you would want to go there. This is the first decision that I've made entirely for myself. Mm. And that's something that I, getting better about living with my softness and figuring out how to treat myself better, figuring out how to harness that as a strength. A lot of that is, like, setting boundaries in order to preserve your own energy and not let it be taken advantage of by other people. That's been, like, a process for the last few years for me to kind of, like, harness my own power, and it feels like I'm feeling very, very empowered by the decision that I made yesterday. That's what I'm feeling excited about, just in general.
Amazing. Well, I'm very excited for you. I'm also very happy because that means you'll be in Evanston longer, and we should totally grab dinner sometime.
Yes. Yeah.
My last question I would have for you, is there anything I did not ask that you wish I did? Or anything you'd like to share that you feel like you haven't yet had the opportunity?
I don't think so. I mean, like, I think, I mean, I mentioned this already, but, like, if there were one takeaway that people would have from this episode, I hope that it's, like, you can just, like, create art, and you don't, it doesn't have to be perfect. Like, art doesn't have to be shared. But also, you can create art and share it, and it doesn't have to be perfect. And there's a lot of value in people sharing imperfect art with each other. So, like, please, like, put art out there.
Right.
So that other people will feel empowered to put their art out there.
Oh my goodness. There's so many moments in this conversation where I felt a bit stunned and I don't know how to respond, because it's like, I'm a little dazzled by everything you just said. You absolutely add to the world by existing, let alone speaking, and sharing your thoughts. Thank you so much. Truly an honor to have you on this podcast and also have this conversation.
An honor to be invited.
I will link, if there's anything that you, any projects or anything, I would love to share for the audience in the notes. Yeah, thank you again for this lovely conversation.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm your host, Anushka, and this is Stitchless. Thank you to Vaibhavi for this wonderful conversation, and thank you guys for tuning in. We plan on putting out a new episode 1 to 3 times a quarter. Email us at stitchpodcasts@gmail.com and follow us on @stitchpodcasts on Instagram for more updates. Until the next one.